If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Father's garden at the tender age of 13. She had a vision of three figures. She knew them to be bygone saints. She was so taken by their beauty that she cried when they faded away. She said, I can't stay here. The message they gave was clear. I must go save the king. Hey, sister, with your rat tail on, don't let them try to end your song. You down, want you to be like everybody else. So she asked her uncle to take her to a nearby town, where she petitioned the garrison commander for permission to visit the crown. Though she'd rather stay home, spinning wool by her mother's side, she found a way to lead the Francais, only 17 years beside. Hey, sister, with your rat tail, before the church court, the illiterate peasant girl of the likes none had seen the sort. She was convicted of wearing men's clothing. She said, I only did so that I wouldn't be raped. That's very nice, dear, but you're a heretic, it's clear. We'll burn you at the stake. Hey, 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 hey. You know there's always gonna be people trying to get you down.
Yes. You've been listening to Joan of Arc from Chadwick Stokes and the Pintos. For the uninitiated, Chadwick, or Chad Stokes, is a member of neo-reggae folk band Dispatch, but last week he released his third solo album with the Pintos, his backing band. Chad has always been a prolific writer who is socially and politically conscious. This album, though, is not only politically motivated, but many of the songs show a more tender side, too. So it's with that we got in touch with Chad for a really great conversation that started when I asked if the creative process was different writing material for himself versus writing and singing songs in Dispatch.
Yeah, I think with Dispatch and State Radio, since I was the singer, I felt like I had to speak for the band, you know, and so therefore be getting really personal. Mm-hmm. Didn't feel like it was appropriate, or, you know, there were kind of larger things that we were singing about that the three of us agreed on, you know, and so it was more topical in that way. And so I think when I first my first solo record in 2010, I was like, oh wow, I can kind of like sing about my life, or I, you know, in a way where I felt like in the past, I'm gonna sing about, you know, the fact that we don't have healthcare or mass incarceration or something, right. You know, and so yeah, definitely lends itself to being able to, you know, something that I was a little uncomfortable with at first, you know, it has been helpful to kind of dive into that. The first record especially was kind of about growing up on the farm, you know, and then this would be my third, I guess. So it's you know, kind of evolved from there.
We're going to get into the songs, but again, more generally, how do you determine what kind of song melody fits with lyrics? And we'll dig in a little deeper, because I have this question around punk and reggae being the best forms of protest music. I know folk is the original kind of original framework for protest music, but it strikes me that punk and reggae, certainly in the last, I don't know, let's say 30 years probably, have become really important elements to protest music. And certainly in What's It Going to Take, it is that reggae vibe. But how do you determine what form the song and the lyrics are going to take in terms of expressing it in song form?
I don't know. I guess I just listen to where the song is. I do love that about reggae and punk and some of the hardcore stuff that could be part of the punk umbrella. That's anti-establishment, which is so good. And I think for me, I just kind of try to listen to where the song is going, and it's pretty rare that I start a song and then it turns into reggae. It's usually just reggae right from the top, you know? So it's, and I do love the protest element of, I mean, that's one of the reasons I like Lucy reggae so much, is because of its, you know, I lean towards the protest side of reggae anyways, as opposed to kind of like lovers rock steady or whatever. But I try, you know, I when I work on songs, it's pretty mindless. And then as I, in the beginning, you know, and then it's just kind of trying to figure out, you know, where the song's going. And I think, you know, especially these days, you know, almost all reggae songs, you know, reggae leaning songs that I work on in my band are political. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right in that they're tied together there. Whereas some of the others, you know, especially recently with some of these folkier ones,
yes,
or quieter ones, more tender ones, you know, they lend themselves to, you know, I'm a dad now too, so there's kind of sometimes when I'm working on stuff, it's late and the kids are going to bed, and I'm in that like
reflecting.
My wife and I are exhausted from the day.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
It's just like a very quiet moment, whereas I think that lends itself to some of the quieter songs as well. You know, we were living in a small apartment. And I didn't want to wake the baby, kind of thing. So it's but I think that for me, it's like the feel of the song can inform what it's going to be about.
Are you surprised that, given the era that we're living in, socio-political climate that we're in, that there isn't more protest music? I think back to, you know, the 70s and the folk era, as it were, and,
yeah,
and all of those musicians who were protesting and had something to say, whether it was Ohio with CSN or any number of folk protest songs. Given the current state of affairs, you would think that there would be more of this kind of music, and maybe there is, and I'm just not aware of it, but within our community even, we're still singing about a lot of happy-go-lucky kind of things, and we're not addressing kind of some of the issues of the day when, sincerely, this is probably the scariest time in my lifetime. Yeah. And I think in many ways parallels the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, it's a fucked up time we're living in. It's so crazy. It's not like it's, you know, we don't have, we don't have a draft, and we just, you know, but we have kids being killed in schools, and we have, you know, the economic disparities off the charts, and we're locking up, especially men of color, at terrible rates. And meanwhile, not letting any refugees into this country, or immigrants for that matter. You know, it's like, it is a wild time. And, I think they're out there, but yeah, there was such a different climate, at least musically.
Mm-hmm.
In the, you know, I was born in 76, but from what I can, you know, because I'm obsessed with those, you know, the 60s and 70s and the documentaries and everything. And I would say that there was, the industry was, you know, there were, the post-MTV music industry and Napster and everything is just so, in some ways, it's leveled off in terms of, you know, there were superstars back then, you know, and now it doesn't feel, I mean, we have anyone who's almost a superstar now, if it might be pop music, that there are still kind of superstars there, but in rock and there's superstars in hip hop and pop and that kind of,
they kind of merge, but with
rock and roll, you don't have superstars. The superstars who are rockers are the last ones of those were like Rage Against the Machine, you know, it was like 90s.
Right.
You know, and since then, the indie rock scene and even the regular rock and folk and what everything else is just like there's way more music because there's way more bands and people are recording in their basements and the record, you know, they aren't contracts like they used to be. And so it's just, there's just so many bands that I think it's that, the way that CSN was ubiquitous, or Hendrix or Dylan, you know, there were these like superstars, and at least in the rock world, it's, you know, it's much more, it's not that, they're not in our everyday culture for everyone. You know, it's like everyone has, because of the internet, it's like everyone has their own, kind of side interests that they're into. Right. And it's not just like something coming through the one or two channels on the TV or the FM radio or stuff. It just feels so different. But like you said, in our community, I do wish there was a little bit more of that. But I honestly, I do, because I like that music, I do feel like it's there. It's just not bands that anyone's ever heard of.
Right. And, you know, you raise a good point with hip hop. I think hip hop has carried on the tradition. I mean, hip hop continues to be this, and I'm not talking about Drake when I talk about hip hop or any of the pop stars. I'm talking about real hip hop, you know, Wu-Tang or whatever. I'm talking about artists who this is their platform for delivering message of consciousness or whatever. And so I may have erred there by saying there's not as much of it anymore. It's just, it feels like it's not on the same scale. And you raise a good point. Bob Dylan was a star. Jimi Hendrix was a star. CSN were stars. Like, so they had probably a bigger platform, and B, they didn't give a shit. They had something to say and they were going to say it, and they weren't worried about selling records or getting streams on Spotify or whatever. It's a very different kind of environment for a musician these days who, you know, whether you care about it or not, you're trying to make a living, and probably being too outspoken is not good for the wallet necessarily.
I mean, we've gone to radio with some, you know, even recently with the, there's a new Dispatch song that's coming out, and the radio take of it. Yeah, we don't want to touch that. Yeah, it's you have the rare, you know, like Rage is killing in the name of that, that got on the radio. But you also, it, you know, as Zach was, those lyrics are really pointed, but if you're just, you they don't have to be, if you just want to, if like it, still pointed at the radio, is like, oh, we can't touch that.
Like
some of other Rage's songs, they probably wouldn't go near, but Killing in the Name of was like, oh, it's, yeah, you know, whatever. It's not too different from a Black Sabbath, you know, sentiment or whatever.
Right. Yeah, totally. Well, thank God they're reuniting, and hopefully that will get some more great music from Chad going. I mean, I hope it's not just this one-off payday thing. I hope they're really in it to win.
I wonder. Because I know those guys a little bit. So it's,
It is. Well, Zach doesn't really strike me. I mean, he could have made millions, right? He could have run that train for a long time. He doesn't really strike me as being that kind of guy. Let's turn back to your music and your record, because we can pontificate forever, probably. It's interesting that you say you're a father now, and I'm sure that has changed your view on many things or reaffirmed your view on many things. And I don't want to jump to conclusions, having not known the sex of your child, but I would imagine a song like Chaska, about women's empowerment is, sorry, I take that back, Joan of Arc is this, this feminist anthem and song about women's empowerment. And I would imagine that as a father now, you think about that a lot more than maybe you had in the past.
Yeah. And even as a husband of a very politically active wife, I think this, my kind of re-education as to what my, the ramifications of my white male continues and continues to evolve. Even when I think you would, if you would ask me 15 years ago, I'd be like, yeah, I'm hip to that. I know what I've, you know, what that, gives me or whatever, but really I'm still learning about, the reality of that and the oppression of women, or the oppression of someone with, you know, a person of color, and what that, and how different their life or any instant in their life is, if it's walking into a Dunkin' Donuts, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I continue to understand what that's the reality of that. And, but yeah, being a dad to two girls so far and one boy, and, it is something that, you know, that you're really thinking of the future and what kind of future are these kids inheriting. And a true belief that if more women were in power, we would have so many less problems and issues. So it is a the ego of the powerful man is, and not to say women are immune to, I mean, if you look at Margaret Thatcher or whatever, she was as violent as some men of that time,
right,
in terms of her own policies. But it's something that the ego of the man and that testosterone and power and what and the decisions that that leads to is really scary, as we're seeing in the White House now, to a crazy extreme, unfortunately.
Yes, it's true. It's always interesting when there's a press photo or a gathering. It tends to be all old white men, you know. For whatever reason. Well, we know what the reasons are, but you know, it hopefully that stuff changes. Hopefully that stuff changes with people like you having something to say and people listening to your message and the political climate just being so toxic that there's no choice but to change kind of what's going on.
Yeah. I hope so, man. This year is going to be so interesting.
Totally. I couldn't agree more.
We were just at a Pete Buttigieg rally today up in New Hampshire. It's fascinating to just get the lay of the land and, you know, and just listen to him. And we were at the Bernie rally the week before this. So it's super interesting, man. It's going to be a wild ride, 2020.
Absolutely. Well, we hope that some of the other topics that you discuss continue to be part of Pete's vernacular, Bernie's vernacular. I don't really care whose vernacular it is or where they come from, but it's important that things like the gun violence epidemic is addressed. Yeah. I mean, yes, the environment is important and, you know, the economy is important and all of those things. But man, if we don't have people to live on the planet, none of that shit's going to matter. And it's so scary to think about the gun violence epidemic. I mean, I live in Canada, so I'm fairly removed from it, but it's just so shocking. Yeah. It's so shocking to see how it's just part of your life. Like, it's just part of the life there. And it's so sad.
Yeah, no, it is. It's really frightening, and it's got to change. People we have to show up for this election and let the world know and for each other that this is, you know, this is not, you know, and elect someone who feels like this represents how we really feel and who we are. And maybe that's how some people felt when they elected Trump 4 years ago, or almost 4 years ago. I think that was a big awakening too for me, just being like, okay, this country's divided, and it's not, you know, everyone in my circle, you know, thought Trump was a clown. So, you know, I kept on not believing it could really shake down the way it did with him being elected president, but I was wrong.
Yeah.
So.
Well, hopefully that'll change, right? I mean, it changes by people actively getting out there, and I don't know how active you are with headcount. But either way.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Either way, whatever side of the aisle you're on or whatever state you live in, whether it's red or blue, it's important just to vote your conscience, and hopefully more people who are so exasperated by the government that is currently in power do something about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Important. You know, we could go into Love and War and PTSD and Blanket on the Moon, which is, you know, another huge issue in terms of immigration policy that your country has. I think we should really let the listeners think about those messages and listen to those songs on their own. And I generally dislike delving into the specific lyrics of songs with artists because, well, it's your baby, and who am I to critique lyrics and stuff? So I think what you've done is you've created a record full of thought-provoking topics that people need to think about. And if they aren't thinking about them, it's certainly an important time to.
For me, it's always the stories. You know, it's like the it's not necessarily the it's the little stories that in a, you know, one-on-one relationship that tell a great bigger story. You know, right. but it's told best by, you know, that I think as humans we can relate to that one person and what their story is.
Like
as opposed to like listening to CNN or whatever, you know,
right.
That have the overarching issues. But so I think it is, you know, sometimes getting too into the minutia of the words is you know, then people can't come up with like what they think it's about, which is sometimes right. better than what I was thinking. But there's also stories in there that are, they're almost not meant to be political, but they are, but it's really about the story more so it is about than it is about the politics. But of course, I don't mind when stories carry political weight, but for me, you know, it's always been an attraction to the story first.
And that's certainly the case with Chaska, right? I mean, it is the story, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've always been interested in the stories from the early days of when the settlers got here and the Native American plight and how wronged that population has been in this country, and it continues there's just so many because of the inherent nature of what was happening there. It's basically the genocide of the Native Americans. And so of course there's a lot of stories of devastating stories of struggle and despair, no shortage, but when I come across something like that, I know I would want to, if as a fan of music, I would want to hear a song, you know, I would want to hear a song about that, you know, then I'm like, well, I'll give it a try.
Well, it's very well done. And we thank you for it. I did Thanks. Mention off the top that the record is full of socio-politically charged songs, which are extremely important, and then very tender love songs. And I mentioned Hit the Bell with Your Elbow because I love that song and I love its sentiment. Does your wife know the woman who you're singing about in Hit the Bell with Your Elbow?
Well, the funny thing is, like, sometimes that issue does come up with certain songs, and I'm just like, no, it's not. That's not real. It's just a... that's just made up.
Good cover.
Hit the Bell with the Elbow is kind of an exaggerated version. Like the protagonist in it, or the man in it, is not he's not a good guy in it. It's he's kind of like this, and I can relate to this to some extent. He considered like a lot of men, you know, me included, you know, like I was, he in the song is like kind of like a worse version of myself. And he is like, considers himself this journeyman, and, you know, he wants to travel around and find himself and just go where the wind takes him. So he's a little bit of a parody of that. He stays out so long and then returns and says, you know, okay, I'm ready. So in that way, it's like, the woman has the power, I guess, is a good part of that song. And when my brother actually brought that phrase to me, Willie, who plays in the Pintos.
Yeah.
And to me, and I was like, okay, and sometimes words are, they're so good if they're strung together along, like that phrase, you know, and it almost right away, I was like, well, how would I sing that? And that can be a chorus, you know, and it had like a Grateful Dead kind of feel, slash like the band. That song's been around for a long time. We've been playing it live for a long, long time, years, like maybe 5-6 years. Mm. So it's great to finally get it recorded.
Speaking of the Grateful Dead, San from San Francisco is another one of these, I guess, taking memories from some place and carrying them with you wherever you go, right?
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, it's really great to see a songwriter who we know about from other climates and other work being able to talk in such a genuine way about relationships and you know, finding yourself or looking for yourself and all of that. I'm curious about track 10, which is what I would have ended the record with, by the way.
Oh, which is track 10? Is that Mushiquanux?
Yeah, Mushiquanux. So I wanted to ask you about that song.
That was the end of the record at one point.
Okay.
It has like the birds in it and stuff. And
yeah.
You know what? This is a good way to look at it. The record ends with Mujiquanox, and then as the credits roll, that's when Favorite Living Drummer plays.
Yes. Right. Fair. Okay. I can see that. That's very fair. So I want to know about Mujiquanox first.
So Mujiquanox and Love and War were really late additions to the record. When the Pintos had gone home, and I felt like we had a good record, but I just wanted a couple little guys to kind of tie the record together a little bit in a way that was less produced and just like really straight up, just a guitar and a vocal to kind of like to let a little bit more intimate, I guess.
Yes.
I felt like the record would be helped as a whole by that intimacy. Mm-hmm. And Mujiquanox is what our first girl, her name's Frida, but her nickname's Mushi. Mm-hmm. And Mushi evolved into Mujiquanox. That was her nickname. And we had a little song and a dance when she was like, you know, not even 1 year old that we would do with her. And we'd do this Mujiquanox dance. And we would sing that Mujiquanox part.
Oh, wow.
And I always liked it, because I knew with like the right harmony or whatever, it would just sound kind of weirder in a cool way, or maybe like it wasn't even English, or it was like a song from somewhere else.
Yeah. Know? I thought it was a Native American song when I first.
Right. You know? Yes. Because it has the cadence allows for, you know, mm-hmm. not so kind of American, straight up take on music. It sounds almost like world music-y, right? So and I liked that, and then I just developed it a little bit with this verse, with a little verse to it, and talked about the day when my wife first told me she was pregnant with our first kid, you know, and that, as a couple, that's a really big moment.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't know if you've experienced that as well, but that's like, you know, whether you're married or not married, or if you are like having a kid, you know, you're with that other person. And when you know that you're having a child together, that is a wild moment. And I remember she telling me, and like this, I think it was like, there was a little rainbow, cause it was like the weather couldn't figure out what it was doing. It was raining, that sunlight was raining. So it was one of those moments.
We don't have a lot of time. We've gone a little long, but I just want to ask you quickly before we say goodbye, and thank you for doing this, of course.
Thank you.
Who is your second favorite living drummer?
That's such a good question. I would say Brad Wilk is my second favorite living drummer.
Okay.
So in other words, the song's about him. Right, not getting into the troubadour when we were all inside.
Yeah,
he's the drummer for Rage.
Yes,
and the song I'm inside with my band State Radio, mm-hmm. and we're in there with all these superstars that I kind of subtly drop the name of them in that song, kind of.
Like, yes, Jerry and Lane, and,
right, yeah. And they're all in there. You know, Lane's not, but he maybe in spirit he was, but and. Stuart Copeland is in there, and guys from Jane's Addiction are there, and you know, Cypress Hill is there. So there's always allusions to these rock stars that right. we're in the room with, and then Brad Wilk isn't let in because the bouncer doesn't recognize him. He sold out whatever. Even though Tom is in there, it was kind of Tom's gig that he had asked State Radio to play on. But I would say that. I changed it to second favorite living drummer because I thought that was kind of funny, because it begs the question, what you know, who favorite living drummer is kind of funny enough, but to mm-hmm. say second favorite living, just kind right. of takes it to another level. So I would say, depending on what band I'm in, I answer at that time, when someone's asking that question.
Yes, yes. That's a sassy answer, my friend.
But I can tell you my favorite Dead drummer, and that's John Bonham.
Oh, okay. Fair. I mean, yeah, we could do this. Keith would be up there too, probably. Thank you so much for doing this, and thank you for a really thought-provoking and sincere and delicate record. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks so much. Really, really nice to hear. I feel like it's nice to have conversations like this. So thanks for listening, Ira.
Insightful, intriguing, and absolutely worth listening to. Chad's new album, Just Like That Conversation, are indeed a great listen. You can learn more about Chadwick and the Pintos, upcoming tour dates, and lots more at chadwickstokes.com. Before we leave you, have a listen to another track off the new album. Here is Chaska.
In the back of the heart of Blue Earth County, many, many years ago, I stood in the cold next to my mother and 38 men blindfold, as the natives took their place singing their death song. The prison chaplain called their names, but he got one of the names wrong. Now I've been fighting with this notion that the world does a good man well. I've seen all around me a man do hateful things, and he's still walking around, you see, while the good one's gone. Some say there was no mistake, some say they wanted that man to be hung for falling in love with a white woman and caring for her infant son. When he was first captured, she cried, don't take him, you don't know. If never heal, my bones would be bleaching on the prairie. My children would little crow. I've been fighting with this notion that the world does a good man well. I've seen all around me a man do hateful things, and he's still walking around. Gone. As the moment came and the ropes all placed and the drums, they quieted the crowd. The men wailed and danced on a trapdoor gallows and yelled each other's names so loud. And when they heard their name, they yelled, I'm here! On about Christ and how he died, and the axe was lifted high.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.